You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums Must Hear Before You Die. This episode, we'll be talking about The Laws. The Laws. In the room, I have Rob.
The Law.
And on the line, I have Ben.
Happy to be here.
And Kyle.
The Law.
Thank you.
The Laws is the only studio album by the English rock band The Laws, released on the 1st of October 1990 by Go Disc. The producer was Steve Lillywhite and Bob Andrews. The genre is alternative rock and jangle pop, and I'm going to read from the book Rob Morton. Any list of the best pop songs of the 1990s had to include There She Goes from this album, a sublime blend of chiming guitars, falsetto vocals, and a hook so catchy it will be stuck in your head for days. Even folks who have never heard of The Laws are sure to recognize it from the commercials and movies. Whether it is a love song to a girl or a thinly veiled ode to heroin is debatable, a fact that must have escaped the attention of the Disney executives who put it in the soundtrack of the 1998 remake of The Parent Trap. But There She Goes is not the only treasure buried on The Laws. This is an album chock full of infectious 2 to 3 minute pop songs and ballads. Son of a Gun is another highlight with its clip-clop beat and seesawing bassline. Timeless Melody features a skittering rhythm and a fuzzed out guitar solo, while Feelin' is a good old-fashioned gut bucket stomp. So with a mass of critical acclaim and strong sales in their favor, why did The Laws release only one album and then fade away? Well, by most accounts, lead singer and songwriter Lee Mavers, always a surly perfectionist and maybe a touch unstable with it, the band took 4 years to make The Laws and burned through at least as many producers before the label finally lost patience and insisted they release the version piloted by Steve Lillywhite. Soon after, when Lee Mavers was asked to describe the album to NME, he replied, "I hate it. It's the worst. A pile of shit. There's not one good thing I can say about it. Definitely the minority opinion, but there it is." All right, what do we think of The Laws? Self-titled, The Laws.
Brilliant.
Hidden classic.
Yeah, fucking brilliant.
Pretty good. Yep.
Took a while to get into. And then once I got into it, I was like, oh.
Yep. Yep. Same. Oh. Excellently crafted jingle pops. It was harder for me to get into this than it was the
Beatles.
No. we're going further. Soft Boys. I came in knowing what I was getting with the jingle pop. Okay. This one was, it's cleaner than that.
Yeah.
And I think the production value actually was a detriment to my finally like getting going, like not quite as dirty as I would have preferred it to be.
You wanted it dirtier. Yeah.
You talking about Laws or Soft Boys?
Laws. Yeah. The Soft Boys are dirty as shit. It's great.
I thought this was really dirty when I first listened to it. The more I listened to it, the more I saw they tried to record this like 5 times over 2 years with like 4 different producers.
This band has 24 former members in one album.
I totally got a Neutral Milk Hotel kind of vibe off this record. It was like one person's kind of struggle for perfection and something that was really important to him.
Except he wasn't in a collective. He was just a dude that pushed everybody away.
Yeah.
I feel like this album is in my wheelhouse. This is my scene. Like I like garagey, jangly, throwback shit. And I think this album's pretty good, but I've got notes. Well, first off, credit where credit's due. I think that There She Goes is one of the best pop songs ever in. It's so simple. Yeah. It doesn't even have a verse. It's just a, it goes chorus, 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 bridge, chorus.
Yeah. And during the bridge, it's singing the same lyrics. As
yeah.
The, I was like, what?
When was the first time you guys heard the song There She Goes?
It was before She's All
So
That.
I Married an Axe Murderer.
So I Married an Axe Murderer. Same. So track one.
Yep.
New Radleys. Yep.
Yes. So I think that that song is a bit of a tentpole for this album. I don't know if we would be talking about this album if it weren't for that song on it. The rest of it, I think it's good. It's pretty simple, skiffly, three-chord garage pop. There's a lot of skiffle on this. Like right now we're listening to Liberty Ship, which is a straight-up skiffle track.
There's skiffle, there's the birds, there's like the Who.
Dude, Kyle, that's another thing. I feel like there's so many different songs in here where you can draw a direct line to like, okay, this was this British Invasion band that they were like Way Out, which I like. I've got a star by it. It's got a cool, it's like got like a slow kind of waltz. It sounds like something off Odyssey and Oracle. It sounds very Zombies to me.
Yep.
Like Freedom Song sounds very Kinksies to me. It sounds like one of those Kinks like music hall songs that they'd sneak one into every album. But yeah, Kyle, definitely Birds, Who.
It's like a buffet of 60s British Invasion. Yeah.
Well, I also thought Timeless Melody, which we just listened to, was very Replacements, very, you know, kind of R.E.M. and Birds. And
yeah, jangly.
Yeah, jangle.
And speaking of R.E.M., I feel like I know that there's like a lot of different producers and I'm sure this is coming from a lot of different recording sessions, I would imagine. But certain tracks like I Can't Sleep and also Timeless Melody, I like the song more than I like the way the song's being presented to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that I Can't Sleep, I think it's like, it's really kind of muddy. I think it's like kind of gets lost in the mid range there. It could,
like, I know this guy was a fuss butt, but I could see why he was a little frustrated with the Lily White mix. Yeah. It is muddy. Yeah.
And then Timeless Melody, they're doing the thing on that with the rhythm where it's kind of like a weird, like syncopated rhythm. Like they're trying to like do something, push some boundaries where like the beat's falling in different places. I think, in my personal opinion, I think that Timeless Melody would sound really cool with kind of like a straightforward wall of sound production. Just like double up the guitars, double up the drums, make it four on the floor and just kind of driving and more simple. I could be wrong on that, but I feel like almost it was like picked at for too long into where, I don't know, this is just my opinion. I feel like he had like a good simple song, and over like the 4 years of trying to record this album, he just nitpicked at it for so long that now it's needlessly busy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. Somebody was talking about this record and they speculated that the reason that this guy just kept re-recording this and was always unhappy with every single production was, instead of chasing a sound, he was chasing like a memory, you know, like he's touching on all these like, you know, milestones and, you know, important things about British Invasion rock from the 60s. And maybe that's, you know, we're talking 1989, you know, late 80s, he's recording this. Maybe he's just looking for a sound that only exists in his head, you know?
It's possible, definitely.
Because I think this sounds good, but I mean, he tried to record this record 5 times over 2 years with 4 different producers. That's almost madness. Like,
yeah.
You know, and just jettisoning all these musicians.
I do want to read a quote from Lee about the album, about being a perfectionist. He, in an NME interview, he said, "The album should have cost 500 quid to make. We could have made a great record on a 4-track bedroom gear. I'm not a perfectionist. Contrary to what everyone thinks, I just want to capture the spirit of the music on our records. Before we were signed, we had a little backline and a vocal PA. That's how it should sound. Simple, tough, street. But they didn't understand that." And it's kind of interesting because he's saying things like the acoustic guitars on this album don't sound like acoustic guitars. They sound like electric guitars that are unplugged. And I do kind of hear, especially on like the last song, was it Looking Glass? Right on that song. It's an acoustic guitar, but it sounds like it's in a dead room. It doesn't have any space to expand. You know, there are different things where I can kind of hear where he's talking about. Now, do I agree with him? No, not necessarily. It's like you're only going to go so far, and, you know, production does have a big impact. But at the same time, it, you know, the songs are kind of the songs.
I mean, as a person who's hated everything I've ever recorded, like, I understand his... If I was a fussy Gus, the way this fella seems to be, like, yeah, it would drive me fucking insane. Like, you know, but ultimately, like, every one of, like, fucking, we're on Doldrum right now. This is absolute the Kinks.
Yeah. I was not as fan of the ones that just reminded me of other bands as much as I was where it felt uniquely as if they were presenting something a little bit more. Like, when I felt like you're saying, the Kinks, Doldrum, it's like, yeah, this is the Kinks, this is early Stones or something. I was like, this just sounds like they're trying to remake another song.
This just sounds like...
Mm-hmm.
What sold me was, you know, like, I read about all these gripes you had about this recording, but I was watching, like, live sets from, like, 1991
mm-hmm.
on YouTube, and they fucking destroy. Maybe he should have done a live record because it sounds incredible.
They released a BBC session.
Yeah, there's a PS.
Oh, do they? Yeah,
like, for sure.
I haven't checked those out, but yeah, the live footage was incredible. Like, the appreciated the songs way more after hearing them performed live.
What the hell's Kink song is this? It's the one about being a train.
Last of the steam powered trains.
Last of the steam. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what this is.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I hear that. That bluesy riff.
Yep.
Ding ding dun, 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 dun. Yep.
It's good. It's good though. I mean,
yeah, it's great. I'm sorry. I don't mean to put words into your mouth. Like I said earlier, like, these records, like, it took me a minute
mm-hmm.
to really, like, digest it. And
I don't know if I was right on board, but I just identified instantly because I was like, Beatles, they're doing the Beatles thing, or, you know, Kinks, or the Who, early Who, you know, I got the Skiffle-bee, I got the Merseyside, you know, sound as soon as it, like, came on, and I was just
it's been a while since I put on some Skiffle, bro.
Yeah, well, we've been doing this project, and this sort, it seems to reoccur. Every single era has their own quote unquote Beatles Who, like, reemerging band that seems to come along. We're going to get it with Oasis.
Are literally from Liverpool.
Yeah. Who? Yeah. Then we're going to get it with Blur and Libertines. And, you know, like, it just continues. There's always this one band that people perceive the, you know, the Beatles
roots
as
rock.
Like, yeah, it has this rooty element that everyone's always looking for in England. It just continues to come.
Well, I fucking love this one.
We're listening to There She Goes a few tracks ago. Does anyone else get, like, big Frankie Valli vibes from his vocal delivery? Like, going back and forth from, like, the falsetto to the raspy?
Mm-hmm.
Like, being able to, like, flip that switch. That'll always give me Four Seasons vibes.
You know, this band also reminded me of a little bit? Mekons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Sure. But the Mekons, I think that's what he wanted. I think he wanted that raw roughness.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Lillywhite is not the producer to do that. He should have. I'm trying to think of a producer that would have gone there with him.
Steve Albini.
No. No. Although he would have just got the room sound, it would sound completely different. He wanted that a little bit of a. I think he could have gotten that later. I think the 90s, maybe they were at the wrong time. It probably just was the wrong producer, right?
I don't know. It wasn't, because you can't. My God, can you even Can you even imagine working on a record for 4 years?
Yeah.
That's insanity.
It's insane. Fucking,
it's absolutely insane. There is something wrong with the individual.
Chinese democracy.
It's not like some big opus.
No.
Like,
these are all simple songs. These are all very small pop songs.
It's no Chinese democracy.
Yeah. I heard you.
I'm sorry, Kyle. What?
I heard you.
Chinese democracy.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, this is no Chinese democracy, but like it. But it's fairly simple pop tunes. I mean, yeah, like this guy, he can claim up and down, like, I'm not a perfectionist. But aren't you? If this wasn't done in a week, aren't you? This is not hard.
This album should have been able to be recorded. I could fucking knock this out in a
day.
Yeah.
And it would have sounded as bad as he wanted it to.
Yeah.
You know? Like, what are you doing?
Record it live if the songs are so good.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. I have not listened to that BBC recording, but I'm with how much I enjoyed this record, I'm definitely going to seek it out and give it a shot.
I'm so surprised that you are saying that, because it took a minute for you to come around on the Stone Roses. And that album felt very like a precursor to this. That felt like it still had one foot in the 80s, but this one is one foot in the 90s a bit.
And I think that might have been why it took me enough listens to kind of like get to it. Cause like I knew the single off of I Married an Axe Murderer soundtrack. And Kyle, do you say that was the Bo Diddley's covering?
Boo Radley's.
The Boo Radley's covering it. The early aspects of 90s alternative is not really where I lay my hat. Like I prefer the harder stuff that comes a little bit later, which is why this took me a minute to kind of finally like absorb. Like it's like a weird like two step away from Violent Femmes for me. It ultimately like came to me, but no, that Stone Roses one was also, it was just, I have trouble, man. I have lots of troubles. Talk to me after the show. I'll tell you all about them.
We've been inundated with the birds. We're primed not to like,
This doesn't have all those like beautiful harmonies that the birds have though.
Hey, it just has chicken.
True. Speaking of harmonies, although the Laws had 24 members over their span, there was almost always the nucleus of Lee Mavers and John Power. He's the bass player through most of their tenure, and he sings backup, and he's definitely like the rock for Lee Majors to be able to lean on. He ended up leaving the Laws, and he formed British indie band Cast, if any of y'all are familiar with them.
To counter what I was saying before about him not being a perfectionist, they said, I knew the songs were diamonds, but getting them onto tape wasn't so easy. He told Music Radar in 2011, we'd record 6 songs that were fantastic, but there's one thing wrong on the 7th song. Lee would be convinced that everything else was terrible and we'd have to start all over again. Sounds like a perfectionist.
Sounds like undiagnosed OCD, to be honest.
Yeah. But they continue, you know, they said that Lee was right up there with any of the singer-songwriters they'd ever work with. He was an amazing talent. The album was sort of a timeless, you know, element, which I
agree with that.
It's a throwback, but it's also modern and
it sounds unstuck in time for sure.
I wonder what Lee Mavers has been up to in the last 30 years.
Yeah. I'll tell you what Kreisgau has been up to.
What's Christ coming up to?
Blimey! Another pop group with guitars, quartet from Liverpool, no less. Once in a blue moon, though, somebody with a gift comes along, and frontman Lee Mavers is that somebody. Given his spunk to grotty voice, think Colin Hay or early Cat Stevens, dash dash, of Minute Work and Matthew and Son, respectively, you uncultured dolts. They don't sound enough like the Beatles, and I hope that in a hit or two, they'll find themselves a drummer that they can tie to his or her chair, because too often the beat is vestigial. Think Quarrymen, but don't look a gift genius in the Andenoids. Not until he turns into Billy Joel. Not until he turns Jesus into Billy Christ. Joel on you. And that was an A. He gave that an A.
That sounds like a Mad Libs that somebody. Yeah.
I know he loved it, and I don't disagree with a lot of it, man.
No, I don't either.
No, like, and it's crazy. Like, this is the only record. This is, I mean, they've been playing for years, and finally, like, went in to record this record, and then just kind of disintegrated afterwards. And I think the record itself is great. And maybe my Stone Roses issue was the electric guitars.
It's a little more psychedelic too, yeah. And yeah.
Yeah, listen to Stone Roses again, Ron.
Yeah, Stone Roses. I listened to that again.
That record is incredible.
Yeah,
it gets. I was reading part of an interview with John Power, the bass player, and he was saying when they cut "There She Goes," he said he thought that it was going to be a very big hit. He thought it was going to be a big hit, and then he thought it was going to go away as quickly as it came. Just be like the flavor of the month and then go away, when in retrospect, the opposite happened.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a couple songs on here, including the ones we're listening to. Freedom Song, Failure, Doldrum.
I think Looking Glass is just a beautiful.
It's a beautiful song. Dude. I do think that it could have been recorded better. I do think a good portion of these. I
stand by the thing that I put on the post is
yeah.
Like it could have, you could have told me it was Guided by Voices, I wouldn't have
that's true.
Even fucking blinked.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we're saying that it could be recorded better, that's not bad. No, Steve Lillywhite's doing a fine job. It's just that I can hear if he's saying that he wanted a more raw, like just immediate production, I can hear that.
Yeah, totally.
And he probably in his mind was thinking, I need the lightning in the bottle instead of just getting the record complete. He was probably
I think there was a sound in his head that he
mm-hmm.
he just couldn't hit it.
Yeah.
Well, whatever the fuck he hit it, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some might say it's great.
I still can't believe that they said their sound was informed by the love of Captain Beefheart and The Fall.
I can. On this track specifically, I can.
Yeah, that's true.
I heard it was heavily influenced by the band Love. Like, who knows? Like,
yeah.
All that jingly ding-dong shit. In 2013, NME ranked The Laws at number 153 on its list of the 500 greatest albums of all time.
That's high.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
It is high.
And 2016, Rolling Stone said that this record was number 13 on its list of 40 greatest one album wonders.
Man, I'd like to see that list. One album wonders. I bet it's a cool list. Just have one album that people like and then implode. I want to see that list.
Yeah. Piggybacking on what you said, Birch, with Noel Gallagher, he did name this as one of his 13 favorite albums.
Such a
what a weird number, Noel.
Okay. Thanks, Noel.
You ponce.
All right, what do we think?
Total positive. I think that this is a truly great record. Such amazing pop songs. And I mean, seriously, they could be just in the regular old like pop catalog. Like any of these songs could be picked up and redone by somebody and it would still be a fucking masterwork.
I was thinking that too. I was like, it's really surprising that no one's pulled out one of these songs and redone it, because it's
ripe. It's so ripe for the picking, man. They're exactly. So good.
Yeah.
Positive for me as well.
Yeah.
Guess it's not such a one-hit wonder, huh?
No.
It's absolutely a one-hit wonder.
Well, I meant...
It's full of wonderful hits.
It's full of wonderful songs. Even though they were only recognized for one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least America's side. I don't know. Brits was There She Goes just all over the place for you guys.
It was all over the place again when we were like in high school when Sixpence None the Richer covered it for the She's All That soundtrack.
Yeah.
Did you it guys gets covered for soundtracks?
Dear British Dads, did you watch So I Married an Ex-Murderer?
I wanted to say the first single was not There She Goes. It was Way Out.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They released that on the 2nd November 1987, and then There She Goes, 31st of October 1988.
And they re-recorded those for the record.
Mm-hmm. So, but then they made a good choice. They did Timeless Melody as the single after that. It wasn't until almost 2 years after.
I saw that Eddie Vedder did a cover of Timeless Melody, but I didn't check it out.
Yeah. But there's a lot of thick neck on it.
He's done quite a few of those quote unquote introspective folk songs. All right, next time we'll be talking about the Black Crowes' "Shake Your Moneymaker."
Are you serious?
Thanks, y'all.